I figured out who the neighbor around the corner is.
Oh, yeah?
I like him a lot.
Ooh.
He lets me talk as much as I want, is very simple, and has great plans.
Okay, I have to meet him.
Sure. Say hi. This is Metro PCS.
Metro PCS is in your neighborhood. Come say hi and get unlimited data, talk, and text for only $30, period. All on the fast nationwide 4G LTE T-Mobile network. Metro PCS. Wireless. Figured out. Coverage not available in some areas. 1 gigabyte of high-speed data included. See store for details, terms, and conditions, and data management info.
You're listening to Packers Talk Network.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game ticket from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website at ticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
Throws it up in the air, says a prayer, and Janice is on the top! Oh, please! What a cat! That's insane!
You're listening to the best Packer radio show on the internet.
Cheesehead Radio.
Reach the eye.
Get those back.
So I think that's the logical explanation.
Let's just, you know, say that didn't happen.
It was a return to greatness. It was a return to form.
It's crazy. And he just kind of flew into the radar.
Get this out there so I sound good on Cheesehead Radio.
Yeah.
No negativity allowed, sir.
So I think that's actually going to be really exciting to watch. I don't think there's anything positive we can say. There's a lot.
Oh, you were looking for positive. Yeah.
I guess that's what I meant. Positive, I think. Hello, Packer Nation. We are back. The Packers have one win in the books, and we are here to talk about it tonight on Cheesehead Radio. Your hosts tonight are the self-aggrandizing and word-maker-upper C.D. Angeli of PackersTalk.com and Cheesehead TV. And we have, as always, the delightful Michelle Bruton of Cheesehead TV and Bleacher Report. We are missing our glue tonight. Jamie Snowden cannot be with us, so hopefully the show does not fall apart. And finally, you have myself, resident wizard Jersey Al of Cheesehead TV and PackersTalk.com. Our guest tonight will be PackersTalk.com alumnus Marcus Eversole, who now has a real gig on Green Bay Sports Radio, WDUZ The Fan. As you probably know, sponsoring the Packers Talk Network this year are the fine folks at Ticket King. They've been selling tickets in Wisconsin almost for 25 years and have a great reputation. Be sure to check out their website, theticketking.com. And have a little bit of news here there. We've arranged a special promotion with them, a 10% discount on tickets that you buy through them. These are going to be the promotion is going to start the day after the Vikings game and run through the day of the Giants game. So that gives you basically 3 weeks. You know, the Packers have four straight home games coming up after the Vikings, so I'm sure a lot of you will be looking for tickets. You can get yourself a 10% discount by entering the code PackersTalk when you order them. So some good news there for our listeners. And speaking of news, now it's time for the Packers News.
Packers News.
Starting with news that's been weighing heavily on Packers fans' minds this week, cornerback Sam Shields, who's going through the concussion protocol after suffering a head injury in the fourth quarter of the Jaguars game, missed practice on Wednesday. This is the fourth concussion that Shields has suffered during his career.
Now, to address the depth at the cornerback position, the Packers waived rookie running back Jarrell Presley on Wednesday and moved wide receiver Herb Waters, who I'm not quite aware was actually on the team to begin with, to cornerback due to the exigency. It must be one of those words I'm making up. Waters was seen practicing with the defensive backs on Wednesday.
Yeah, practice squad guy, but it seems like now that they have that available roster space, maybe he's coming onto the active roster. We'll see. But it's kind of been a game of musical chairs for Presley. And speaking of musical chairs, the Vikings are being secretive about their plans at quarterback for Sunday, but Mike McCarthy thinks the team will face Sam Bradford this week.
It's kind of like deciding if you're going to play Curly or Shemp. I mean, I don't know if it really matters. Good things are ahead for left tackle David Bakhtiari, who signed a four-year extension, averaging $12 million per year. Now, this deal makes him one of the top five highest-paid offensive linemen in the league.
Speaking of financial matters, Forbes released its annual ranking of NFL team values on Wednesday, and the Packers came in 13th. The franchise is valued at $2.35 billion, which is a 20% increase from last year.
It's about the same percentage they increased ticket prices. Quarterback Aaron Rodgers is preparing for the possibility of not being able to use his hard count to get Minnesota to jump off sides on Sunday in the Vikings' new U.S. Bank Stadium, which is expected to be extremely loud. Rodgers did break the news, however, that Ragnar, the motorcycle-riding Viking, is not expected to be in attendance. So perhaps we'll be short of total chaos.
Rodgers broke that news?
He sure did in an interview today. He apparently got some inside intel on Ragnar. Keeping tabs.
Okay. Sorry to interrupt.
Speaking of our friends in the North, the Vikings opened as 2.5-point underdogs in the upcoming game. You have to wonder what the point spread would have been if Teddy Bridgewater were playing.
Well, it's essentially a home game for the Packers. I'm sure that plenty of Packer fans have gotten those tickets. And finally, rookie receiver Trevor Davis, who sat out in week one with a shoulder injury, was a limited participant in practice Wednesday, but should do more as the week goes on.
And that was your Packers news, and now it's time for your...
Packer Tweets from Packer Tweets.
Well, Packers fans have long dreaded the day when the horrific color rush jerseys would make us cringe at the sight of them. After finding out today that the Packers will be wearing the lack of any color in their color rush jerseys, all white, Aaron Nagler tweeted, "So the Packers color rush jerseys are basically their away jerseys. Got it."
I'm almost let down by that. In other reactions today, after David Bakhtiari signed his four-year, $51 million extension, Directing Titan summed up our feelings by simply tweeting, "More like Banktiari, am I right?"
Clever, clever. Our good friend and tonight's guest, Marcus Eversole, also chimed in on the Bakhtiari signing with this gem. On Saturday, David Bakhtiari was downgraded to hashtag questionable. Today, he was upgraded to hashtag paid.
Finally, our new punter made us forget about the Ginger Wolverine, mostly with three booming punts joined with a poor punt in crunch time. The Packer ranter had this to say about new punter Jacob Shum's first outing. For future use, three Shumdingers and one Shumster Fire. Trademark.
It's funny that he's got him trademarked. Well, three out of four ain't bad, and the ranter never disappoints, and that was definitely this week's Cheesehead Radio Tweet of the Week.
Tweet of the Week.
Shumdingers and Shumpster Fire.
Already paying dividends.
I tell you.
Oh,
that really
goodness.
Was. That was a shumpopotamus, if you will. That shank was real. It was real bad at the end.
Yes. Timing especially.
Shumptopotamus. Oh, my God. Well, hey, welcome back this week, everyone,
well,
to Cheesehead Radio. It's me, Michelle, and Jersey Al. And I think we got something to celebrate this week. Yo.
First win of the season.
And a cardiac arrest to boot. Because, you know, it wouldn't be a Packer win against an inferior opponent if we didn't have to sit and wait until the last minute for some miracle defensive play to happen and pull out the game at the last second.
Yes, if we didn't stop doing what scored us two quick touchdowns and get conservative and decide we're going to run out the clock starting in, like, the beginning of the third quarter, you know, we might even have an easy game every once in a while.
You have to wonder how much of that came down to the fact that it was a heat index of 97 in Jacksonville. So it's a little bit of a risk for McCarthy to bring up the no huddle and the up-tempo offense. And you have to just sort of wonder if he kind of put the gas down in the second quarter, but then realized his guys were just getting too gassed. I don't really know. That's the only reason I can think of why they would stop a good thing.
You're being very kind, I feel. You're giving him an out. You're giving him an out, and I don't think there is an out. I think this is just what he does. He's done it before. We've seen him do it in playoff games, specifically. So I don't know that we can – it's a good theory, but I don't know that I would buy that, Michelle.
I do think – and I tend to be too forgiving, I think, or too optimistic. But, you know, I saw the offensive problems. There were definitely some miscommunications. There were definitely some coaching issues. But, you know, you go on Twitter after the game or you hear Aaron Rodgers say that it was embarrassing. And you'd think that they got embarrassed and lost and came home 0-1 on the season. I was just amazed at the negativity after this game. I mean, all things considered, you know, the Jaguars are not a bad team by any means. I think people have a hard time accepting what they've become, but the Jaguars are a talented young team on the rise. This was a tough game, toughest conditions they'll play in all year, and they came away with a win. I still feel like we have to celebrate that.
You know, I'm really surprised by that also. I don't know that they thought they were going to have an easy game. I know they were really optimistic, which they always are during preseason, although they don't get very many reps to really justify that optimism. But, it seems like they thought they should have won this game easily. And I think with the conditions, and as you said, a Jacksonville team that is not a doormat anymore by any means, you know, they've one of the benefits of being a doormat for a few years is you get to pick some really high draft picks. And as long as you don't screw it up, you'll be pretty decent in a few years after that. And that's kind of where they are now. You know, they're still very young. They don't know how to close out a game yet or finish a game probably. So, the Packers were able to do that. But, I don't think there's any reason to be that negative yet after one game.
Especially given the fact, I think this is sort of flying under the radar a little bit. But, you know, and yes, the Jaguars were missing Chris Ivory. He went to the hospital the night before the game. So it was really just all on TJ Yeldon. But the Packers' run defense, which has just been a sore spot for them for years now, and it's just totally, you know, it's been the reason they've lost games. They've had so many problems at inside linebacker. They held the Jaguars to 48 rushing yards total. That wasn't just Yeldon. That was total. That is incredible. They had 10 tackles for loss. You know, lots of things that went really well, things that we would have loved for them to show last year. And you know, I feel like people almost are so focused on picking apart, oh, well, the offense had miscommunication and they burned the timeout and then they got the delay of game and then the offensive line half was pass blocking and half was run blocking and then they settled for a field goal, you know, all of that, which, hey, those are valid concerns. Those are maybe week one kind of working some kinks out, but there was a lot that they did very well, I thought, in this game.
I think the sun was in their eyes. That's why they had trouble. If the sun wasn't in their eyes, I'm just kidding.
Okay. Explanation.
That's just an apologist thing, you know. These are the Packers, and someone said it to me on Twitter. Someone posted on Twitter during the game, you know, the Packers need to score on this drive. We can't rely on the defense to save the day. And I'm like, dude, have you watched the Packers for the last 8 years? We always rely on the defense to save the day. That's like what we do.
Well, I don't know about rely on, but we throw it in their lap, put it that way.
Exactly.
It's not like we're planning that. Yeah, okay, we're going to let the defense do this. No, it's
Julius
like,
Clay.
Oh, well, it's up to you guys now.
Off you go. Thank you.
Yep.
Chop, chop. I think one thing that was an interesting contrast, though, is the Packers tended to be running a traditional offense. They were trying to pick up yards. They were trying to extend their drives. They certainly struggled with it early in the game. I mean, it was a lot of three and outs and really put the defense in a bad spot. The Jaguars had a lot more. They had a lot of big plays. I mean, a lot of really, and it seems like they're kind of dependent. It's that young team mentality that, you know, yeah, we're going to hit a 80 yard or a big run or something like that. They're a home run mentality. And I think some of those big plays is what really kept them even. I think without those big plays, I don't know if the game would have been as close, but they made enough of them to make a game. But that stated, Aaron Rodgers and some of those passes, those touchdowns, holy cow, Devontae Adams, that's going to be replayed for years. The pass to Jordy Nelson, in which there wasn't even a window, it literally went through the middle finger of the defender and was caught by Jordy Nelson for a touchdown. So
like a Madden glitch.
Seriously, you're right, it was. It was like, you know, if you pause it and you actually go in 360 around it, you're like, oh my God, the ball is actually inside his hand and went through. That's what it looked. It was craziness.
Yeah, I heard that complaint from a lot of Packers fans after the game that, you know, the Packers only averaged 5.8 yards passing. The Jaguars were making a lot of big plays. Their offense was looking more deadly. You know, and I think that's a valid concern. I mean, certainly the Packers are going to come across a lot of teams. Allen Hurns and Allen Robinson are fantastic, talented young receivers. And guess what? The Packers are about to face a lot more talented young receivers, many of them in their own division. But that being said, you know, I think we can have an idea of how this Packers offense is supposed to run. And yes, if Jordy Nelson's on the field, if we have a seam-threatening tight end like Jared Cook, maybe we expect Rodgers to be averaging 9 yards per pass. But at the end of the day, you've got to just take what the defense gives you and just sort of play it, you know, how you see it. And so if that's the way, if kind of a more dink and dunk type game was the way they needed to win this game, hey, they still won the game.
Yeah, yeah. And I think part of that, too, is, you know, despite all, and we talked about this last week a little bit, despite all the Jordy Nelson is full bore talk, you know, they were a little careful with him. You know, they weren't sending him deep. They weren't sending him on difficult routes. I mean, Devon House even said it after he had a couple of comments that said he thought Nelson was probably at around 80%, you know, not fully there. So they were taking it easy on him. But in any case, while Nelson is 80%, our next guest, I think, is 100%.
Introducing tonight's special guest, 105.7 The Fan, Marcus Ebersole.
That was the best segue you could come up with. He's 100%.
Yeah, I know. That was sweet. That was just, I know. Hey, I'm not on the radio, you know.
Jersey Isle, available for weddings, birthdays, bar mitzvahs. Oh, gosh. That's awesome.
Don't
Marcus,
call
Marcus is
doing?
Full bore.
He's full
bore. That was awesome. I love it. That was great. That was terrific.
Right. You are listening to Marcus Ebersole. I get to listen to him daily. I'm a fan, WDUZ. He's going to be hosting a new show called Air It Out, weekday mornings 9 to 11. Feel free to listen to it if you're in the area or online. And he's the co-host and produces Sportsline on weekday afternoons. Fantastic. Marcus, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great. Awesome. I mean, obviously, football season in Green Bay, it's like you flip a switch. Life is totally different outside of football season, and then in football season, you're just busy as heck. But it's all good. I wouldn't rather have it any other way.
Good. Everyone's got a little more spring in their step, don't they?
There's no doubt, really. I mean, yeah, everywhere you go, people are talking about the Packers, and now they're 1-0, so what more could you ask for?
Mm-hmm. Let me toss you my first question here. Last week, the biggest story was this whole Josh Sitton deal, and there was talk about the whole locker room, and the locker room was kind of down, and kind of wondering what effect it had. Lane Taylor comes in, plays relatively well. To your knowledge, what's the locker room atmosphere right now coming off a win?
I mean, it always seems the same, and that kind of sounds cliche and like what all teams would want to portray as the overall vibe around the locker room, but it really does. Whether it's a win or a loss, you step into the locker room, and it does feel the same. Now, I guess that's kind of to be expected. I mean, you can't really expect everybody to be losing their minds. Initially, right after Sitton was let go, it was clear TJ Lang was down. You know, I mean, he was probably fighting tears, and as a close friend, it's human nature, you're going to be upset. But I think right now they have turned the page. They've moved on. Sitton's with a rival. So whatever went down, I mean, I'm sure you guys have heard all the rumors, what really went down between Sitton and, you know, a teammate or whatever might have happened, and certainly the contract factors into it as well, with him being in the last year of his deal. But at this point, it's definitely in the past as far as the Packers are concerned, and there's no difference in the locker room. Like I said, whether it's a win or a loss, somebody was let go or not, it's generally the same. It's pretty status quo in the locker room, and I guess starting the season with a win doesn't hurt anything because as far as the post-Josh Sitton Green Bay Packers, you are undefeated. So, you know, you're moving forward, you got the guys you have, and you move on.
Perfect. Michelle?
Hey, Marcus.
Hey.
So I want to talk a little bit, so looking backwards and looking forwards, talk about running backs. So Adrian Peterson had an extremely quiet season debut against the Titans in week one. He had just 31 yards on 19 carries, which was an average of 1.6 yards per carry. And incidentally, the Packers' run defense was able to hold the Jaguars to just 1.8 yards per carry in week one, which is also kind of equally crazy. I don't know what's crazier, you know, GOAT Adrian Peterson having that little or Packers being that stout. But do we think the Packers can seriously contain Peterson this week, or was last week just kind of fluky?
You know, it's crazy. I think yes would be the answer to that question there. It was kind of fluky. That's like 5 feet per carry you're talking about, and that's nothing to write home about if you're one of the offenses there. But it's interesting because if you look at Peterson's numbers, and we've been looking through this all week, Peterson's career against the Packers, he's played 16 games, so a full season, and it's over 1,700 yards. He's averaging 110 yards per game against the Packers. Now, you look at those numbers and you're like, wow, you know, he's just a Packer killer and they're in deep trouble on Sunday night and they're going to run it down their throat like they always do. But then you look into it more, the Vikings are 5-10-1 in those games. So take those 110 rushing yards per game, that's great, but you've got 5 wins in 16 games. The Packers will live with that. You can rack up 200 yards on the ground, but if you're not winning the game, Mike McCarthy and the Packers aren't too worried about it. So if you go last season, though, rarely does Adrian Peterson, you know, go back-to-back that few or that poor production or anything, but 19 carries last week for 30-whatever yards it was. Not a typical Adrian Peterson performance. However, last year against the Packers, 3.5 yards a carry in each of the two games against Green Bay. So I don't know who's going to be at quarterback this week. It's going to be Sam Bradford, I would imagine. Nobody really thinks it's going to be Sean Hill this week, I don't think, but either way, the game plan, I think, is going to be pretty similar. McCarthy said today, you know, we're preparing as if both quarterbacks could play and we're covering our bases. We're preparing for both of them. That's just a nice way of saying the Vikings want to run the football, and it begins and ends with Adrian Peterson. We are going to stack the box regardless of who's under center. So is it fluky or not? I don't know. I don't think the Packers have a top-notch run defense. You just look at the depth on the D-line, and I still think that's the biggest question mark on the team. I don't think it's going to be every week, you know, you're holding the team to under 50 yards rushing or whatever the final total ended up being last week. But it's encouraging, to say the least, and based on what you did against Peterson last year, I think you got to feel pretty good about what you have going into week two.
Definitely. Thank you.
Hey, Marcus, it's Al here. How you doing?
Doing great, Al. How are you doing?
I'm all right, all right. Hey, first let me just say it's great to see a former oldgbp.com and PackersTalk.com alumnus move on to a real broadcasting gig. So congratulations on that. That's a wonderful thing.
Well, thank you very much. And again, thank you for the opportunity. I was just a college kid. You let me start blogging, and it's just all worked out. So thank you.
That's what I tell all young guys that are in that same situation to do. Just practice, 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 however you can. So you took the bull by the horns and moved on and made something of it. So good for you.
Now, I appreciate it.
Yeah, let's get to some football. Now, during the game, you saw Rodgers do a good amount of moving around the pocket and throwing on the run. Now, some people look at that and say, oh, that's breakdown and protection. Others say, no, that's just what he does. He's comfortable doing that. Where do you stand on that?
It's interesting. I mean, I didn't really know what to expect in going into the first game. I kind of thought they'd rely on the run, partly because of Lane Taylor, and, you know, the other part just that they kind of wanted to see what they had in Eddie Lacy, this, you know, quote-unquote new version of Eddie Lacy that frankly looks a lot like last year's version of Eddie Lacy and the year before that, but whatever. I think it's kind of an overblown thing. With Rodgers, though, it wasn't the – like, last year was just such an outlier based on what you've seen from him in years past. Like, the 2015 season was just almost unrecognizable when you look at Rodgers and the rest of the offense. I was expecting to see a bigger difference, I suppose. There were some plays, too, where, like, they had that run-pass option at times, and he still made some questionable decisions there. Like, Lacy, I remember on one screen play, I think it was on Jory's first catch, Lacy wide open on the left side of the field, probably would have been a 40-whatever-yard screen play for a touchdown. He made the wrong decision, threw short to Jordy, and it was like a 10-yard gain or whatever it was. There were a couple questions that I had not decisions you typically see Rodgers make. As far as moving around in the pocket, I think that's something he loves to do, and he's really, really good at it. It's like the guy's got eyes on the back of his head, and he's very comfortable moving around. He doesn't get flustered. He's always looking like he's under control. I guess it's never really a concern for me with Rodgers moving around in the pocket, and I thought the O-line did a pretty good job overall. I can't say it was a breakdown in protection and he was forced to move around. I kind of just think that's his game. And the receivers, specifically Jordy Nelson, they're on the same page as him usually, you know, when that ends up being the case. If he has to move around, they know where, you know, what each other's thinking, and their chemistry is always on point. So I guess to answer your question, and I've given you a long answer, I'm not worried at all about Rodgers, but I definitely was not worried one bit about the O-line in week one. I thought it was actually pretty encouraging. It's almost like the long snapper. Like with Lane Taylor, all eyes were on him. And with the long snapper, you never talk about him until he botches a snap and it costs you. Lane Taylor never got embarrassed in week one. And as far as I'm concerned, that's a success.
Yep, agreed. CD?
Hey, Marcus. Your thoughts on Eddie Lacy? You know, my casual, probably obvious observation was that whenever he seemed to run north and south, he was gaining yards, and actually at times seemed rather elusive. I mean, there was a couple times he had a little space and did a little shifty with his hips and didn't seem to move that much, but guys were just flailing left and right. He was picking up some positive yards, but anytime they're doing anything that seemed to be, you know, moving on a slant or moving on a diagonal or something where he had to turn a corner to get upfield, it was really, really struggling. Now, what's your thoughts? Is this running game effective? Is this something that they need to bring Starks in on some of those plays for, or scat back and just keep him pounding the ball straight forward? Do you think Lacy's back?
I think Lacy's back, and I think he's going to have a really big year. I mean, it's, players have a funny way of having big years when they're in contract years. I'm not saying, I don't think it's a coincidence. I think Eddie Lacy, with being in the last year of his rookie deal, and the coach essentially called you fat after last season. A coach who, let's be fair, isn't exactly the poster boy for Beachbody.com himself. When he calls you fat, you're generally, you're motivated. You're just by human nature, you're motivated by that, and you're in the contract year. Now, I think he's going to have a really big year. And overall, I just think way too much was made of this Eddie Lacy weight thing. When they drafted him in the second round, they didn't draft Eddie Lacy to be Darren Sproles or Barry Sanders. They drafted him to be a big battering ram between the tackles running back, and that's exactly what he is. It's what he was as a rookie when he was great. It's what he was in his second year when he might have been better. His third year, he had a down year, and yeah, he was a little bigger than you probably wanted him to be, but he's still a big dude right now. I mean, if you had him step on a scale after last season, and then you had him step on a scale right now, I mean, I don't know, maybe 10 pounds he may have lost or something, but he's a big dude. Like anybody I've seen SportsCenter highlights of him, like in preseason and stuff, and they'll be saying things like, well, you know, reshaped Eddie Lacy, he lost a bunch of weight in the offseason, he's looking great. To me, he's looking a lot like he looked last year. He's a big running back. There were a multitude of problems last year offensively. Lacy's weight became clear. I mean, obviously, was a focus once Mike McCarthy said he can't play at this weight next year. But there was a lot more than that. Like, Jordy Nelson was out, of course. We talk about that. The O-line underperformed, and they were battling injuries. There was that as well. You know, people forget Randall Cobb was battling through a shoulder injury and wasn't at his best all season. There were a number of different things going wrong last year, but when the coach says the running back is fat, that's what we focus on. And that's what we focused on all off season. And I don't think that's right. I don't think Eddie Lacy was, you know, the big problem last year. And as far as getting Starks into the rotation more, in my opinion, if anything, I think you roll with Lacy even more than they do. Like, I would just keep him out there in the red zone. If Lacy's tired and he's gassed and he says he has to come out, fine. Give James Starks some reps. That's great. They're close. They have a good relationship. That's awesome. In my opinion, Eddie Lacy is far and away, head and shoulders, the best running back on this team, and I want that guy on the field as much as he can possibly be on the field.
So, nutshell, he's PH fat, not F fat.
Yes.
Correct. Okay, gotcha.
Well,
thank you, Michelle.
Yeah, I think I want to stay on offense. I want to talk about the passing game, but just to follow quickly on what you were just saying, it sort of made me think of how, you know, I think people – people get jealous. And I think they look around the league and they see some of these scat backs or these little speedsters running around, you know, gaining lots of yards, being quick. And I think they get a little bit jealous and they think, well, how come the Packers don't have that? But I think people have to remember that the Packers use a power run, and that, you know, someone like Eddie Lacy is exactly who you want for that. You want to ground him up the middle. We saw in this past week's game, Eddie Lacy doesn't do so well all the time when you try to bounce him around outside. So I think that people need to just kind of respect him for what he is and not try to want him to be something he's not.
Yeah, no, totally agree.
Yeah. But staying on the offense, so just switching to the passing game, that's probably, I think, what I've seen the most hand-wringing, which is amazing how much hand-wringing goes on after a win. But there it was. The Packers, you know, they got some things going with Jordy Nelson and Devontae Adams. Those touchdowns were clutch, but nothing much in the way of deep game. Rodgers averaged, I think it was 5.8 yards per attempt, which was 27th in the league. Are you still worried about the Packers' vertical passing game like we were last season, or are they just kind of taking what the defense gives them and making it work?
I wouldn't say I'm worried about it. Last year it was just like it didn't even seem like an option, you know, because you kept waiting for a while. You know, okay, eventually it's going to come. You have a couple down games, but then after a month or two of saying that, you're like, okay, maybe it's just not going to happen this year. Again, last year was just – it was totally different than anything we've, you know, grown accustomed to with watching this Packers team. But I wouldn't say I'm worried about it, but I can't say it's just going to be, you know, snap your fingers, problem solved, Jordy's back, in comes the deep game again, because we didn't see that in week one, like you said. You know, Jordy, he had a few catches, but what did he average? You know, 5 or 6 yards a catch or something, 6 catches for 32 yards, I want to say, something like that. But I think it'll come back. Jordy looks okay. I know he didn't play in the preseason, but he was running around in practice. He looked like Jordy. But that being said, I mean, the Jordy Nelson we're used to seeing at his best is the guy running with double moves, play-action pass, Rodgers stepping into his throw, chucking it deep. And before it even ends up in the hands of Jordy Nelson, you envision that happening. Like, you know it's going to be right on the money. You know 87 is going to catch it, and you know it's probably going to be a touchdown. We didn't see that in the first game of the season, and Jordy's first game since the NFC Championship a couple years ago. So I don't want to say I'm worried about it, but I think the jury's still out. And just to, again, to kind of pump the brakes a little bit on Jordy, when he had the little, what he called a hiccup in his knee, we all kind of started to freak out right away. Oh, no, the ACL, it's, you know, it's acting up again. It's an issue. Then when he comes out and says, you know, don't worry, it's the other knee, I'm kind of scratching my head like, wait a second, and that's nothing unusual. Like, it's sometimes you overcompensate and you hurt the other knee or the other side of your body or whatever, but at the same time, that's exactly it. You know, it's like you have the ACL, then the other knee has this hiccup. Okay, that covers both knees. Then you had the hip operation last offseason before you tore the ACL, and now you're 31 years old. Other than that, Jordy Nelson's feeling great. So I can't say he's going to be back to full strength. I think he will be because the team seems so confident that he will come back, and he looks good in practice. You know, he looks like he's in shape and ready to roll and be that deep threat again. But that is a lot of stuff, you know? Like, he's had injury issues, and he's 31 years old. I don't know. There's definitely enough reasons to pump the brakes.
Right, for sure. All right, Al?
All right, Mark. Yeah, Marcus, since we're analyzing particular players, let's do the same thing, but over on the defensive side. Let's look at Julius Peppers. Peppers played 29 snaps in the Jacksonville game, 10 at outside linebacker, 19 as a down lineman. Overall, he just hasn't shown much at all this year, either in preseason or in this first game. I was one who thought the Packers might not bring him back for this final year of the contract and use that money somewhere else, but they decided to. Has Father Time finally caught up with him?
Maybe. You know, and that might be it. Honestly, if Nick Perry plays the way he played in week one, I don't really know what Julius Peppers gives you other than just a rotational guy. And maybe even most importantly, what you just said there, he played more snaps as a down lineman. And right now, I mean, the D-line is thinner than thin. Like, I mean, there's nothing there. And they kind of have to play, you know, more sub-packages with guys like Julius Peppers and Dayton Jones as down linemen because, frankly, they don't have any other options. It's so thin on the D-line right now. Nick Perry played great. Clay Matthews had a couple plays where he made his presence felt, but you know, kind of had these questions even back to training camp, how they were rotating Clay Matthews on one side and Perry on the other. And then it would be, you know, Peppers and Elliott and Fackrell and Dayton Jones and these guys mixed up. But the pair always seemed to be Clay Matthews and Nick Perry, the two USC guys. And I don't think the college, you know, commonality was the reason the Packers were doing it. It's not their Trojan package out there or anything like that. I think they just saw it coming as these are going to be the two guys they roll with as long as they can roll with them. And Julius Peppers is just kind of be a rotational player at this point. And as much of a freak as he is, and he is just that, he's an absolute freak athlete. I've never seen a bigger player in that locker room. I stand up next to him and I'm not even up to his shoulder. He's a freak of nature, college basketball player. He's incredible. But like you just said, at some point, Father Time is undefeated. What is he now, 36 years old? I guess I would answer your question by just saying maybe. It might not be the typical Julius Peppers kind of year that we've grown accustomed to.
I agree. Michelle?
All right. Well, looking forward again a little bit back to the Vikings. We touched on this a tiny bit early on in your time with us, but I just want to get a little bit more into whoever the Vikings are going to have under center on Sunday. Mm-hmm. They're trying to be secretive about it. I guess they were really upset that the news leaked last week that Sean Hill was going to be starting. But McCarthy seems to think it's going to be Sam Bradford. I'm sure the team is preparing for Sam Bradford. And that's kind of my question for you is, how, if at all, does the Packers defense kind of change its preparation and its game plan to stop someone like Bradford as opposed to someone like Sean Hill and just the different things they bring to that offense? We saw Minnesota has a lot of really talented young receivers. Diggs was way better than I thought mm-hmm. he was going to be this year. So how do they kind of make sure that whether it's Bradford or Hill, they don't connect with those young receivers?
Well, I'll just say, if I put myself in Dom Capers' shoes and I'm the Packers defensive coordinator and I see Adrian Peterson as the running back and Sean Hill as the quarterback, I'm probably stacking the box to shut down Adrian Peterson. If I'm looking at the Vikings and Sam Bradford as their quarterback and Adrian Peterson as their running back, I'm probably stacking the box to stop Adrian Peterson. So regardless of who's the quarterback, you know, the first and foremost, you got to stop the run. They were able to do it last year with Teddy Bridgewater at quarterback. Adrian Peterson averaged 3.5 yards a carry in both those games. That's a win for the Packers. They split those two games. More often than not, though, if the offense is able to do anything, if you hold Adrian Peterson to 3.5 yards a carry, you feel pretty good about that. You're probably going to win. I'm preparing as if my job, first and foremost, is to shut down Adrian Peterson, or at least, you know, contain him to a certain point to where they're not just churning the clock and keeping Aaron Rodgers on the sideline. It's going to be Sam Bradford, though. Like Mike Zimmer made a comment this week where he's like, you know, we don't want it to break. It broke last week and got out. We don't want that happening again. You know, everybody's picking him to go to the Super Bowl. We're just trying to keep it close. I'm not going to tell you who my quarterback is. It's my gift to sports talk radio. Thank you for that, Mike. That's great. However, nobody thinks you're starting Sean Hill in week two. It's the first game in your new stadium. You just traded a first-round pick and a conditional draft pick to go get Sam Bradford. Starting Sam Bradford. Nobody thinks otherwise. So you can say it's a gift to sports talk radio. That's fine. We will talk about it. But you're starting Sam Bradford. And that being said, regardless if it's Bradford or Hill or Sean Hill, if I'm a D coordinator, I'm preparing for you the same way. I'm going to shut down your running back because I'm afraid of him and, frankly, not really afraid of either quarterback.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of my big question heading into this game, assuming it's Bradford, is that we saw when he was with the Rams, Bradford was kind of the king of the dink and dunk offense. Lots of horizontal passes, lots of short games, screens, things like that. And as we saw on Monday, the Rams are obviously still kind of stuck in that. But the question is, you know, Sam Bradford has a pretty good arm. He never really got a chance to show it off very much. And so you sort of wonder, what does Bradford look like when he's not in Jeff Fisher's scheme? And that's sort of a big question mark, I think.
Yeah, I mean, as far as talent, like, I don't know that Sam Bradford can't play. It's something that, I mean, you look at it, he's number one overall pick for a reason. But I think continuity is so often overlooked in the NFL. You look at a quarterback, and if you give him a new offense to learn and a new coordinator every single year, you can't expect him to be Aaron Rodgers. It's like that in any walk of life. You know, you can't change somebody's job every single you know, every other month or whatever and expect them to do exactly what you want them to do. It just doesn't work like that. For Sam Bradford to have new system after new system, he's traded here, now he's traded there. You know, he's had the injury issues, you know, and you can't do anything about that, and that's tough. I don't know Sam Bradford is an all-pro talent, but I don't know that Sam Bradford can't play. I'd like to see him in the same system for a few years before I say, you know, he's good or he's not. Right now it's kind of in the I don't know territory.
Right.
Okay, Marcus. Well, actually, you have been listening to Marcus Eversole, who you can hear on Green Bay radio station WDUZ 105.7 The Fan. Marcus, one last question for you, and then we'll let you get on with the rest of your evening. The Packers are down to three healthy cornerbacks with none on the practice squad to call up. How much does this worry you?
Well, if I'm Dom Capers, I'm happy that it's either Sam Bradford or Sean Hill playing quarterback this week and playing against the Vikings. But I would probably, you know, send an old text message to Micah Hyde saying, like, hey, bro, you're a quarterback this week. We need you because numbers. That's about all there is to it. I mean, you're right. Three healthy corners, and Quentin Rollins was asked about that today. He just kind of smiles in the locker room like, yeah, I mean, I don't even know what kind of coach speak answer to give you right now. We are low on numbers. We don't have many corners to go. Fortunately, they have a bunch of safeties, and Micah Hyde is kind of a Swiss Army knife back there. So I'd expect him to see a lot of time at that, you know, air quotes, corner position. But they're definitely thin there. I mean, the Packers D-line thinks that the Packers cornerback depth is thin. So that's kind of where we're at right now with the numbers game.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, before we let you go, you have something going on coming up with JerMichael Finley, don't you? You want to give us a little preview on that?
Yeah, well, JerMichael Finley has been on, he's going to be on our pregame show all year. So the final hour of the pregame leading up to kickoff, JerMichael will join me and Bill Rabior on Green Bay Game Day, the pregame show. And then he also has a weekly spot on Air It Out with us on The Fan, so 9:15 every Friday. And he's also starting up a podcast. It's going to be weekly from the Boys and Girls Club in Green Bay. The first episode was just released, but as the season gets going and I'm able to be in there when we record it, it's going to be really good. I mean, he's already informed me of a bunch of stories that he's going to tell on there, and they were kind of eyebrow-raising and jaw-dropping stories that as we get into the season, people are going to like to hear. So it's going to be really good stuff. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's going to be good stuff. It's called the J. Mike Show, so look on Twitter, Facebook, and his website. It'll be posted there, so be on the lookout for the J. Mike Show.
Excellent.
Perfect. I'm really glad that you're helping JerMichael Finley come out of his shell a little bit. I know that he's always been a little shy.
He struggled with that, drawing. Yeah, I know.
He has struggled. Thank you for helping him out of that. Ladies and gentlemen, you've been listening to Marcus Eversole. You can follow him on Twitter at Marcus, M-A-R-Q-U-E-S. Probably not how you thought you were going to spell that. Eversole. Michelle was asking, how did I pronounce his first name again? I said, it's Marcus.
Yep.
It's fine.
Oh, man. Happens all the time.
Yeah. I can't imagine. He's on 107.5 WDUZ, and I love listening to him in the afternoons on Sportsline. Thank you so much for joining us tonight, and best luck to you this season. Keep doing a great job. Make us proud around here.
Sounds good, guys. Really appreciate you having me on. It was fun.
All right. Take care, my friend.
Thanks, Marcus.
Thanks, Marcus.
All right, thanks. You bet.
Okay.
Well, there we go. It was.
Yeah, he definitely sounds like a radio guy. He's a good talker, isn't he?
Not a bunch of hacks like us, huh? Holy cow, he's got it all going on.
Yeah, I'm kind of proud of him. That's great. It's great to hear him like that. I'm going to have to try. I take these little chicks and I raise them and then I push them out of the nest and I like to see them fly.
Better than the alternative.
We're not going to mention the chicks that you pushed out of the nest and they fell hurling to the ground to their deaths.
No names.
Oh, look, one flew.
we must protect the innocent. No names. Anyway.
All right. Yeah. Hey, you know, we've talked a lot about the game here and what's been happening against the Jaguars. Great win. Fantastic. You know, we didn't expect to come out of the game with a complete thing. We knew we were going to go into this week with, you know, we're going to have to clean some things up because, you know, that never happens. But let's look ahead to this game a little bit. And I think there's some excitement that we can have as Packer fans. I'm thinking back to, what was that, 2003, when the Packers opened up the $295 million renovated Lambeau Field and they got the big party. I mean, it was a party. I mean, that was, I was in Green Bay that weekend. I didn't go to the game, but it was a party. And we went in, and I can't remember who we played. Who did we play that first game? Does anyone remember? It was the Minnesota Vikings. Tubb Chris Stadium. Does anyone remember how that game turned out?
I'm going to guess that the Packers probably lost.
I'm going to guess that is correct. So there's a little bit of a...
Because where you're so going with players,
yeah, because there's so many players still on the roster from 2003. I'm sure there's a lot of revenge in the hearts of...
it's on everybody's mind, yes, absolutely.
Exactly. But it is exciting, and I guess your thoughts. You know, the Vikings have had so many struggles. They're very up for this. You know, I have several relatives over in the Apple Valley area, and you know, everyone is absolutely psyched and thinks this is a cakewalk for the Vikings. Your thought on the new stadium and what's coming up this Sunday night?
Al?
Yes, okay. You want me to go first, huh? All right. As far as the stadium itself, to me, it kind of looks like a Picasso painting. I'm not quite sure what to make of it. You know, all these weird angles and shapes, and I don't know. It doesn't really look like a football stadium, at least just from the pictures I've seen, anyway. So, but it's nice and shiny and bright and new, and it would be nothing better than to besmirch that with a Packers win in there, without a doubt.
Yeah, it's ominously U.S. Bank Stadium is already being called a bird death trap or the bird killer stadium because of all those
windows,
crazy
yeah.
windows and glass panels. And so
yeah.
I at least have to say I'm really glad that we are not the Falcons or the Eagles heading into the bird killer stadium because that, I think, would be a little bit ominous.
Good.
But, yeah, you know, I think the issue I have with this is I guess I also sort of feel like they're going to start Sam Bradford. You know, it clearly just makes sense, but that's a little bit scary because we know what a commodity the Vikings are with Sean Hill in week one. We don't know what they look like with Sam Bradford. So I think, you know, I know Marcus really thinks Adrian Peterson is going to be a big factor, but I really think that question at quarterback is going to kind of set the tone for this whole game.
Well, I will toss in, and I will say that I think there's going to be a lot of study of game tape because Clay Matthews moving back to the outside, I don't know if I expected him to be quite as effective as he was because I'll be honest with you, he was getting to the point where he was being well-blocked one-on-one before they moved him inside. I really thought the move inside was a good move for him because he was kind of turning into a Kabir Gbajie Biamila there for, you know, a little while. He was okay in the middle, but boy, did he come back with a vengeance. And as he established himself once again as really wreaking havoc in the backfield, I think that changes maybe how the Vikings may have approached this game. But I agree. I have to agree a little bit with Marcus. I think they're going to be scared to put Bradford back in there if Matthews and company is going to be able to get into the backfield as quickly as they are. And against that line, I think they're going to have some success.
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting point about Matthews because, you know, I think one of my, you know, favorite moments as a sports journalist was getting to interview him last year about his move to inside linebacker. And it was just a really, really great illuminating conversation about all the things that go along with being on the inside. You know, he was on the helmet with Dom Capers calling the defensive plays. And, you know, a big thing about being on the inside is he was playing a majority of the defensive snaps. The great thing for Clay Matthews, who does play with such high energy and just really is so ferocious off the edge, is that when he's on the outside, you know, he's rotating. And so he doesn't have to play almost every defensive snap. And I think that's actually a really big reason why he just seemed so explosive. And even though it was crazy hot and humid, he just seemed so fresh and so right up to the end of the game. I think that just really suits his skill set better to not be called upon to kind of be that anchor in the middle, but sort of just rotating in and staying fresh on the outside.
So you interviewed Clay Matthews last year?
I did. It was really fun. He's a great interview.
Can you compare him to, like, John Crockett? I mean, is there really a comparison between the two?
I mean, there's no comparison to John Crockett, obviously, but...
Because he's great.
He's just great. Hey, look, they've only got two halfbacks on the roster again, so who knows? Get well soon, John Crockett.
Hey.
Absolutely.
You're just not giving up on that, are you?
You never know. Who would have thought that about Bakhtiari? Fourth round draft pick. Top five, man.
Al can attest. What was my column on Cheesehead TV about last week, Al? About how the Packers were definitely going to re-sign David Bakhtiari to an extension. It's
very, very timely, without a doubt. Right on that one. Now, Crockett, that's another thing. We won't talk to you about Crockett. But you're right, he could resurface. I mean, there is a spot for a running back now. It's funny, somebody... When they signed the guy from Minnesota, somebody immediately tweeted at me, they're just bringing him in for a couple of weeks for recon, and they're going to release him as soon as the Vikings game is coming up. And I was like, well, I hadn't thought of that, but kind of makes sense, right? But I was still skeptical, but whoever that was, if you happen to be listening, kudos to you. You were right on, because I think that's exactly what happened. Yeah, so we'll see. Of course, C.J. Spiller is available now. Maybe that's why they let him go, because Ted's going to go out and sign C.J. Spiller. What do you think of that?
Even if Ted were the type of GM to actually go out and sign C.J. Spiller, it does not make sense to me. There's no world in which you need Eddie Lacy and C.J. Spiller on the same roster.
Agreed. All right,
why don't we... getting close to the end here. Why don't we go around and take our final shots? Just a little thought or
final
anything
shot
that you have going on. Michelle, why don't we start with you? What is your final shot?
So I think I quickly just want to mention Blake Martinez and his rookie debut against the Jaguars. I mean, I don't think people realize what this kid is doing. He's 22 years old. He is now, so what I was saying Clay Matthews was doing last year, wearing the headset and communicating with Dom Capers, communicating with the entire defense and kind of being the quarterback of the defense. You had Clay Matthews, a future Hall of Famer, doing that last year. And this year you have rookie Blake Martinez, who barely has spent, he's only spent one training camp with these guys, lots of grizzled veterans on this defense. And here's Blake Martinez communicating. Mike McCarthy said he's doing an incredible job. I thought he was really great against the run, really good at kind of getting into the backfield and getting after the ball carrier. So I'm just, I'm really, really impressed so far with what he's doing. And I think the Packers are a little bit more shallow at inside linebacker than I had hoped they would be. But certainly I think Blake Martinez was an instant upgrade at the unit.
You know, over the last couple of years, you've seen a trend with Ted Thompson. I mean, his whole philosophy is that we're going to go with young players every year and we're going to win with young players. But what's the biggest obstacle to young players starting early? It's usually not physical. It's usually more the mental aspect. So you see him drafting more players from Stanford and those type of guys who are probably much more capable of picking up a complicated offense or defense quicker and being able to get on the field sooner. And I think that's what you saw with Blake Martinez. But anyway, my quick shot or my final shot was actually going to be looking at the upcoming game against the Vikings. The key is always stopping Adrian Peterson. And the Packers have had mixed success. They've had some games where he's just destroyed them and other games where they've stopped him pretty much as well as anybody. And they did it last year. And the key to we're not going to say stopping, but limiting Adrian Peterson is keeping him between the tackles. So the important factor there are those outside guys that can hold the edge, such as Nick Perry, who we saw do a great job against Jacksonville, Clay Matthews, Daytone Jones, to some extent, will be used in that role. Those guys are the keys. Their job is to keep Peterson from bouncing it outside, because that's where he does his damage with the long runs. You know, let them get between the tackles. Let them have the five-yard gain here, the eight-yard gain, the three-yard gain, and hopefully, you know, you can pick off their lousy quarterbacks and do just fine. But so I'm looking at those guys, the outside linebackers, as the key for this upcoming game.
2009 season, if you remember that last play where Aaron Rodgers fumbled the ball in overtime against the Cardinals, and you remember – I remember watching NFL Films had put that into like a 2-minute super slow-mo. Do you guys remember seeing that? You're just analyzing the guy coming in and it's slowly coming out of his hand, bouncing off his knee. And I think there's plays you can do that with, especially big, huge, critical plays that are important. And while I haven't put it into super slow-mo, if you look at the final play where the Packers stopped the Jaguars on 4th-and-1 to win the game, if you put that in slow motion, it's really, really amazing that that screen pass goes out to the right and the receiver catches it and he has a blocker in front of him who has an angle on Micah Hyde. The only other person at the moment that ball's caught, if you pause it, is Demarius Randle, who is roughly 5 yards to the outside. Now, if you pause that and you look at this, all the receiver has to do is fall down forward, and he has a first down. I mean, if you look at where that first down marker is, there is no way he should not make that. All he has to do is take 2 steps towards the inside, and he should have it. So the fact that Demarius Randle was able to close as quickly as he did to wrap that guy up and even tackled him low, he even wrapped him up low, the guy still could have fallen forward and stretched for a first down. He didn't. And by the time he did that, Micah Hyde came around and everyone else came around, Morgan Burnett, and brought him down. That's an amazing play by Randle, because if you look at it in super slow motion, it never should have happened. That's my final shot.
Okay.
He's a stud for sure.
That's just an amazing play. Absolutely amazing play. All right, let's get to this week's predictions.
Cheesehead Radio, Packers game predictions.
Well, it's our first NFC North battle, and it's a big one, taking place at U.S. Bank Stadium, also known as Birdkiller Field. The undefeated Minnesota Vikings will be hosting the undefeated Green Bay Packers on ABC on Sunday night, kicking off at 7:30 Central Time. It's going to be a big game, national audience. How is this game going to turn out? We will start with the amazing, the effervescent, Michelle.
So I think in week one, we had, I want to say, 4, maybe 5 games that ended within 1 point, which I think was the first time that's ever happened. And it made for really great viewing, but also just sort of underscored the parity in this league. And I think there's a lot of parity in the NFC North, too. I think the Vikings are not at all out of it just because Teddy Bridgewater is injured. As we saw in week one, there's a lot of talent on this team between Stephon Diggs, who's really just coming on. Kyle Rudolph had a big game. And Adrian Peterson didn't have a very big game, but we know he's capable. So I think this is going to be down to the wire, kind of hard fought. Maybe it's going to require a last-second defensive miracle again, but I'm going to go with Packers 21, Vikings 20, another 1-point game.
All right. Good pick, Jersey Al.
Yes, I'm going with a game of turnovers and field goals, and the Packers win both of those categories. So I'm going for what might be a little bit surprising, a comfortable 10-point win, Green Bay 23, Vikings 13, and all the Viking fans go home unhappy from their new shiny stadium.
It's always good to make Viking fans lose faith in their team just a little bit more. It really is, because it's so easy to do. My name is CeeDee Angeli, and I'm going to predict a last-second win. I'm going to say it's going to be the improbable bobble 2, reliving the Antonio Freeman improbable bobble. I think that was in 2003 or 2004, 2002. Some crazy play, but I think it's going to come down to the wire. I'm going to say Green Bay 28, Vikings 26. Another thriller, another heart attack is going to be my prediction. Why not?
Oh, well, I guess that means that we are done for this evening. So thank you all so much for joining us tonight on Cheesehead Radio. And thank you to our special guest, Marcus Eversole of WDUZ Radio in Green Bay. Make sure you head on over to PackersTalk.com where you can explore many of our unique Packers podcasts. Please follow PackersTalk.net on Twitter and like the Packers Talk Network on Facebook. Cheesehead Radio and all Packers Talk podcasts are available on iTunes. Just Google Packers Talk iTunes and you will find it. Be sure to subscribe and please leave us a review if you can. You can also listen by using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, or your favorite podcatching app and search for Packers Talk. Finally, be sure to support our sponsor, Ticket King. You can find him on the web at theticketking.com. That's theticketking.com. That's a wrap. Go Pack Go!
Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week when the Packers are 2-0. Until then,
yeah,
go Pack Go!
Good night.
Go Pack Go!
I figured out who the neighbor around the corner is.
Oh, yeah?
I like him a lot.
Ooh.
He lets me talk as much as I want, is very simple, and has great plans.
Okay, I have to meet him.
Sure. Say hi. This is Metro PCS.
Metro PCS is in your neighborhood. Come say hi and get unlimited data, talk, and text for only $30, period. All on the fast nationwide 4G LTE T-Mobile network. Metro PCS. Wireless. Figured out. Coverage not available in some areas. 1 gigabyte of high-speed data included. See store for details, terms, and conditions, and data management info.
I figured out who the neighbor around the corner is.
Oh, yeah?
I like him a lot.
Ooh.
He lets me talk as much as I want, is very simple, and has great plans.
Okay, I have to meet him.
Sure. Say hi. This is Metro PCS.
Metro PCS is in your neighborhood. Come say hi and get unlimited data, talk, and text for only $30, period. All on the fast nationwide 4G LTE T-Mobile network. Metro PCS. Wireless. Figured out. Coverage not available in some areas. 1 gigabyte of high-speed data included. See store for details, terms, and conditions, and data management info.